It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions.
18 plus. You have now arrived at Stadium and Gale.
Boys and girls, ladies and gents, welcome to another episode of Stadium Miguel. It's your favorite Uncle Silk.
It's Dan.
And Del Torre.
We back at the same corner at the same time, kicking and vibing out the 42-0 win versus the mighty Vanderbilt Commodores, right?
That's right. How was y'all's weekend? Silk, what'd you get into?
A whole lot of relaxation, man. Not a whole lot. A whole lot of football watching. Just vibing with the family, spending a little time with the fam. Took my son to throw the ball around a little bit, watch some football. That's it. Once the noon game is over, I'm out of there. Off of social media, off the grid, just vibing with the family a little bit. So that's been the vibrations of my Saturdays lately.
I love it. Good football weekend. Nick, how was yours? I got a long thing to talk about.
Yeah, I had a Mom and dad were in town, so that's always a good time when they show up. Got a lot of stuff done and enjoyed the first of possible several nooners, which means I don't, you know, I'm not at the stadium at 2 a.m. So love a good nooner and don't know if I love an 11 a.m.er in local time this week, but I'll take it.
Nick, you're going to the New Orleans Baton Rouge combo this weekend, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so I fly Friday into New Orleans, drive up to Baton Rouge, spend Friday night in Baton Rouge because I don't trust myself on Bourbon Street with an 11 a.m. kickoff. So I'll spend Friday night in Baton Rouge, and then after the game, drive down. And I think Zach Albaverde and I will enjoy New Orleans on Saturday.
Paint the town red. If you need any suggestions, let me know.
No, it's not Mardi Gras.
I've been to New Orleans many times. I can probably handle it for like 48 hours. So it's going to be a quick 24-hour trip for me in New Orleans. Made sure the Sunday flight was afternoon, not an early flight. So hopefully we'll make it. And I did not book Southwest. So I think I have a plane.
You're lucky. I was in Denver from Wednesday until yesterday. I was one of the lucky ones that fortunately was able to get out. My flight was delayed about an hour and a half coming from Denver, which, you know, it is what it is. Fortunately, it was a direct flight. But boys, let me tell you what, Denver was an absolute just a time of my life out there. Silk participated in the local economy out there in Denver. Caught my first ever show at the Red Rocks Amphitheater, which was just absolutely incredible. Got to see a DJ there, which again, still some music that I'm trying to dabble in. I saw Alenium, which is a big name. Everybody's excited to see him. But if you ever get the chance to see anybody do anything at the Red Rocks Amphitheater out there, it is probably the coolest place in the entire world. It's about 30 minutes outside of Denver. Beautiful view of Denver in the background, huge rocks and everything. I mean, just an unbelievably gorgeous place. But let me tell you what, Denver, shout out to the Rocky Mountain Gator Club. Shout out to John and his buddy who – treated me like I was a celebrity when I watched the game at Jackson's up there in Denver. But great vibrations out there in Denver. Silk, I think it's right up your alley, my friend.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely up my alley. I got to get back to Denver, like, soon. Definitely my cup of tea, for sure. How's the Bender? You be on the Bender tour, man. You took the streets to Denver. What's next? Is Dan froze?
Dan's frozen. That's the Bender kicking in right there. Yeah, he is. He's frozen smiling. If you're watching on YouTube, Dan is smiling while frozen. If you're only listening to this in podcast form, then not doing much for you right now. Great audio.
The Bender tour took it to Denver. We're trying to figure out where it's going next, Dan.
Yeah, no, sorry, guys. My StreamYard crapped out on me. The next trip is to Asheville, so a little bit different. In a couple weeks, got a lot of exciting stuff between now and then, though. So, boys, let's get into
next trip's to intervention. Next trip, A&E soon. Dan's gonna be on A&E Thursday night, 9 p.m.
Hey, right after my 600-pound life, I'm here for Dr. Now and the rest of his shenanigans. All right, boys, let's get into the game. But before we do that, Silk, give Greg Brunn, our friends over at Brunn Insurance, a shout-out.
Shout-out to the greatest insurance firm alive and established in the state of Florida, Brunn Insurance and Financial Services. Anything you may need insured from the Panhandle to the Keys, my man Greg got you. Life insurance, may want to insure that. Boat, car, anything that moves, motorcycle, trailer, business insurance as well, homeowners insurance, all things that can be insured. My man Greg got you. Visit BrunnInsurance.com or give him a call at 954-589-2204. Big coverage, big policies. Greg, what'd he do, man?
I love it. Well, the Gators do, as Silk mentioned, win 42-0 against Vanderbilt. It is their first shutout in a game since they bested Vanderbilt 56-0 back in 2019. The Gators get off to a relatively quick start, end up scoring 21 points in the first half. Dan Mullen is obviously very unpleased, unhappy with the defense's performance during the first half. Comeback score 21 quick points. Think about 6 minutes to bring it up to 42-0. The Gators then go into cruise control for the rest of the game and win 42-0. Silk, want to get your thoughts on the game overall before we dive in a little bit deeper?
Slow start. I didn't think it was a fast start. I don't know.
It was just that one touchdown with like Naquan Wright and
Naquan got busy. We'll get into the details later, but Naquan got busy and then he just got benched right away. I don't know, man. I like the game. I like that we won. We covered the spread. We got good problems in the game versus Vanderbilt, but it's still a lot to be desired in a lot of aspects of our offense. But I'm glad we got to see a few plays go down the field, stretch the field a little bit. Copeland got busy. Happy to see him get active. Rashard Torrance was my spirit animal of the week.
Yeah,
shout out to him. He had a very good game. I like to see that versus a better team, not Vanderbilt. I like to see him. I like to see him run the alley and do a lot of the things he did versus LSU this week and also Georgia. So overall, solid project. Solid game.
Just wanted more.
That's all.
Yeah. So before, Nick, I get your thoughts, I wanted to just jump in there. Silk, you mentioned the Gators did throw the ball down the field a little bit more. Last game against Kentucky, the Gators only threw one pass over 20 yards. It was an incomplete pass. Emory Jones does throw five passes in this game. Four were caught for just a hair over 180 yards with a touchdown in there. So the Gators did definitely throw the ball a little bit further, obviously against a very bad Vanderbilt team, but they did air it out a little bit more. Nick, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, just a weird start for the defense. I think Vanderbilt was able to run 49 plays in the first half. If there was a touchdown called back, and two missed field goals. So, I mean, you're looking at a game that could have been 21-13 going into half with Vanderbilt. So, it was good. I think at least good for Mullen to show, you know, at least a little bit of fire, a little bit of frustration. You know, we had Smilegate 2 weeks ago in Lexington. And, I mean, Dan, if you were on the sideline, Dan was yelling at you. I saw him yell at Todd, Zach Carter, Newkirk, Emery, Anthony, Dan was into it.
But I like it.
Dan was into it. He was yelling. He was. You couldn't say that. You know, he was not interested or happy being mediocre because he was letting everyone have it. And then I think Florida kind of figured it out. But I mean, I don't take a whole lot from this game. Like that was, you know, Chris Lee said to us last week, this is the slowest team he's probably ever seen in 25 years. And other than that, running back number 42. Forget his name, but other than that, like that,
he was right. That was a slow, bad Vanderbilt team. Patrick Smith, shout out to him. 17 carries, 75 yards. Good little player.
Yeah, the 79 plays that Vanderbilt ran were the most that they've allowed this season. It would have ranked third, or I think third most last season in the All-SEC schedule. You know, I think, Nick, you hit did as well. So to combine both of those thoughts, you know, I thought that the Gators left a lot on the field. I think that there's a lot to still be desired. I think that there's still a lot of question marks on game calling. I think that there's a lot of question marks about where players are in terms of their position or being ready to play. You know, I know Dan Mullen obviously seemed agitated. He also seemed fiery and hungry, and it was a different side of Dan Mullen than we've seen. But we also saw some weird procedural penalties. We also saw, you know, a team not look entirely focused. Now, you can argue that that's Vanderbilt, but at the same token, you know, the Gators are coming off of a, you know, a loss to Kentucky, which is proving to be a better team than we probably thought over their win against LSU. But still, you're having the same issues that they had against Kentucky, you know, fester into a game against Vanderbilt, which is, you know, with LSU coming up, you got to make sure, you know, no matter how good or bad, you know, LSU is, you can't continue to make these penalties, especially the procedural ones and ones at the line of scrimmage. So, you know, thought that the Gators played fine, you know, to win 42-0 is obviously what you want. You want to beat the teams you're supposed to beat the way you're supposed to beat them, but it probably wasn't as pretty as we all expected.
Yeah, like the transitive property doesn't work, but like when you see what Georgia right. was able to do against, you know, against this Vanderbilt team, only gave up 77 yards, beat them 62-0. You know, that's kind of what you would have liked to see from Florida. But hey, you got to win, move on to the next week, and now you're, you know, moving into LSU. It's always a tough game with LSU, but I mean, they are reeling, missing some of their best players. So just got to keep it going, heading to the bye week after that, and then make something happen against Georgia. But Florida didn't get help with Kentucky and Georgia both winning last week, and probably some of the games that, you know, they would have needed to lose for Florida to get to Atlanta.
Yeah, I just don't see two losses for both of those programs coming up. So I'm not really even like chasing that anymore. I am still concerned about. I still want to play spoiler a little bit to Georgia, regardless of what if we can't win the East. I'm still concerned about us tackling. If we can't tackle that running back from Vanderbilt, we're gonna have problems against Georgia, and that's just the facts of life. So I don't know what they got to do to upgrade the tackling around here. But that's still a big issue. We had guys in the backfield a lot that was breaking tackles to like keep drives alive and keep moving the sticks. And it's just guys not being able to wrap up. They're in a position to make plays, but they soft if they're not making tackles, right? And these are not like big bruising running backs that we're going to face versus Georgia. So that's something they better clear up. Right. Even against LSU, it's just a different caliber running back. You're going to play against those type of guys, and you got to be able to take guys down.
Yeah, you know, the Gators did have 15 missed tackles in this game as well. So like you mentioned Rashard Torrance, I thought that he played quite well. You know, but, you know, ultimately, other than Rashard Torrance, there was definitely a lot of miscues on this on the defensive side of the ball. Again, you know, to me, you know, I said it last week and I'll say it again. There seems to be a lot of question marks, I guess, with positioning and being able to line up to make that tackle and, you know, ultimately not being in position that then they're going after their legs or going after, you know, below the waist, then, you know, the chance of missing a tackle is going to be higher when you do that. Right. So, you know, I thought, you know, all in all, you know, the defense played fine at times, but also like you said, Nick, you
can't,
yeah, I'm telling you what. Now that I found out that there's a group called the Nelk Boys, it kind of makes sense to me. But you can't, you know, you can't continue to have some of these miscues, especially with Georgia looming out there in a couple weeks. So I got to clear those up. But any thoughts before we dive a little bit more into the offensive side of the ball? Any shout outs that you guys want to give on the defensive side of the ball?
I thought the young boy Marshall came in and did everything. He's living up to like his 5-star billing a little bit at the cornerback spot. So shout out to the young boy Marshall, cornerback. He got tested. They threw at him a lot. I feel encouraged about what I've seen so far from him this season with Kyrie going pro and us having some question marks at that position. I thought he held down his own. They threw at him. Great job at cutting the field off in his technique. he's got to look back for the ball a little bit better. And he'll get, as he get more comfortable and more settled into that position and doing what he's doing, he'll start getting some interceptions when they keep trying him like that. But on the young boy Marshall to play Kane to play some good football, man.
Yep. Seeing him grow up every week, I think. He's just getting a little more comfortable playing a little faster each week.
Absolutely.
Yep, he had 8 targets against him for 0 receptions. There was the one potential touchdown that was the ball was ended up called dropped, but that was over him. But outside of that, I mean, he played the ball about as well as you could. But 8 targets, 0 receptions against him. I thought that he played really well. You know, shout out to Trey Dean and Daquan Newkirk, who both ended up with interceptions in the game. I think my only real question mark after watching that game
defensive line got more interceptions than the secondary at this point, right?
Tied it up.
It's tied up.
It was. Yeah. That's insane. Yeah,
it's nuts. Shout out to Antoine Powell. He ended up with a couple sacks, his first and second career. Princey Umanmielen, Lloyd Summerall, and Tyron Hopper also ended up with sacks during this game. I do want to point out somebody that I thought struggled, and I'm kind of surprised because we didn't see him for a couple weeks, and maybe we're starting to see why, is Jadarius Perkins was picked on quite a bit against Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt was 7 for 7 throwing against him. Just a guy that just seemed to be out of position and struggled a little bit. So definitely want to see more out of him when he gets the opportunity out there. But obviously you want to get these guys off the field quicker and faster. But, you know, all in all, you know, I would classify it as a fine performance. But when you think it's Vanderbilt, you know, fine is probably not where you want to be.
We are doing a good job of finding the running back every year in a new way. I think the wheel route was our thing last year. Having that running back run down the middle of the field, Emory find him, has been quite thing to watch the last couple of weeks. Naquan Wright got a big catch doing that. I do want to get y'all opinion on, like, Naquan Wright seemed to be hot that first drive, just making some cuts you see on Sundays. Got us to the goal line. I'm not a big fan of bench running backs when they get you to the one that they got punched in. But not just that next play, we didn't see Naquan Wright for a while. Just more of that type of stuff, man. And I don't think Damian Pierce playing bad football, but when you got somebody with a high hand and the offense starts sputtering right after he sat down, I just don't see why they're not running with the high hand in the running back room.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, upsetting, but not surprising. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like we could talk about this every week, you know. Every year. I think last week, Damian Pierce was running like a bat out of hell, and then all of a sudden, you know, you don't see him for another 3-4 drives. Damian Pierce should be on your fantasy rosters, though. My guy's vulturing touchdowns away from Naquan Wright. Naquan gets all the way down to like the half yard line, and then Pierce gets put in. What you mentioned on that hitting the running back up the middle, Silk, I think both Pierce, I think it was the same play call that Pierce and Naquan hit on those two passes. So if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So that's interesting to me. I don't know, though, because I think you have so much talent there. I would have liked to see, you know, Bowman get some more run, you know, earlier, especially with Malik Davis out. But it's hard. You know, like you said, if Naquan's running like that, you know, would you like to see him have 15 carries, 20 carries instead of, you know, the 7 that he had?
Yeah, I think that Naquan, in my opinion, is your best player on offense. You know, I tweeted it during the game. I think that he's your not only most explosive, but I also think that he's a guy that makes players miss. I think that he's, when he has the ball in his hands, he's probably your best player. So I would like to see him get the ball more. I don't know if they sat him simply because it was Vanderbilt and they knew that they were going to win, but I don't like that mentality. I think that it's an opportunity for a guy like Naquan, who, you know, has sat and waited, you know, his turn and has showed that he's electric with the ball in his hands. You know, these guys only have 3-4 years here. Use them when you can. And even if you want to save them for an LSU or save them for a Georgia or something like that, you have to think that just the number of carries that they're going to have during the course of their career is relatively limited. I just hate seeing a guy that deserves more playing time not get playing time.
Are you guys surprised by the lack of, like, reaction in this offense? Because I am. I expect a lot more reaction, that type of movement. Are you guys surprised by the lack of I don't think we're getting a heavy dose of that like I thought we would.
No, we got it against Alabama, right? Is that when they played read option pretty substantially in the second half of that game? But I am surprised that I think that the Gators run a very good offense when they are doing the read option. I think that Emory Jones is capable of being mobile. I think that he's obviously capable of pitching the ball. I think the Gators both have the ability to block and the ability to get the speed that they need to run more read options. So I am very surprised. And I don't know if it's Dan Mullen really trying to get Emory Jones more comfortable with throwing the ball or what it is, but I am, yes, very surprised.
Almost like forcing the issue, kind of what you're saying.
I mean, it's just I don't see any flexibility in the offense for Emory. I'm not seeing any RPO stuff either. I'm just not seeing it. I don't see a lot of options of what his strong suit will be him being able to be multifaceted in the things he can do. Run the ball, they got to be accountable for all that. Just dropping him back and not giving him options of things to do and pressing that defense. I think just letting the defense off the hook. But all that just goes back to Dan Mullen not trusting Emory to open up the playbook, because Kyle had RPO stuff and we know he can't run.
Yeah, Felipe Franks had RPO stuff. Kyle Trask had RPO stuff. I don't know why Emory Jones, who is definitely a better runner than both of those, doesn't have that option as well. Obviously, he may not be he's obviously not as good of a passer as Kyle Trask was, but utilize where his strengths are. And those are running the ball and keeping defenses honest with his legs. Nick, what are your thoughts?
I think I agree with Silk. I think it, at least from my view, from my seat in the stadium, it looks like Dan doesn't trust Emory to make throws, to open up things. I don't think any of us thought he was going to be Kyle or the offense is going to look like it did last year. But I mean, this is your first handpicked quarterback who's been there for 4 years. Why are you limited in this way? I mean, because I think he has the arm. I think he has arm talent. You've been in that same offense for 4 years. You should be able to process it quickly in real time during a game. So I guess that's where my question is, because I think it's clear that Dan doesn't trust him. Then what have you been doing the last 4 years so that he hasn't gotten to the point where you trust him to do those things in a game?
Yeah, which I'm not sure if you're ready to switch subjects here, but I do want to bring it up. Anthony Richardson's been back the last 2 weeks. I mean, what are your guys' thoughts on him? Certainly not as highlight reel as we saw the first 2 weeks, but what are your thoughts on him, his usage? I guess everything AR-15.
I don't like the play call. I'm just being just don't think you're putting these guys in the best position for their skill set. That play that Anthony Richardson threw an interception on, I don't know what that play was, but it was two guys running in the screen. You had zipping that screen and also the running back. And I'm not an expert on X's and O's or drawing up screens, but I don't think two of those guys are supposed to be in the same vicinity. But I don't understand why you even throwing screens, doing smoke and mirror things with Anthony Richardson. Get him in the game. Do some of the same stuff you did with Tebow. Run between the tackles, lean on teams. I think we're pulling sometimes way too much, getting a little too sexy with what we're trying to do. I think we could dumb some of this stuff down and just get a little bit do some things to keep teams off balance, bro. I just think AR has been put in positions where, like, dropping back the pass and doing a lot of things that he shouldn't be asked to do when he comes on the field sparingly. Like, you bring him on the field to just run the ball and play action off of that. Read action, like, give him some easy stuff to do if you don't trust him. But dropping him back to throw a screen, like, just let Emory do that or something, bro. Don't bring him on the field.
That doesn't make sense for him to do, right? That's not why Anthony Richardson's playing. Nick, what are your thoughts on Anthony Richardson and his play recently?
I thought he looked a little timid running in Kentucky. I think we talked about that. I don't know. I don't know if I totally agree with Silk there, just having him, run between the tackles. I think, maybe going back to what I just said about Emory, maybe you need to let him run the whole playbook, because if you get to a point, if he's here his, let's say redshirt sophomore year, redshirt junior year, and he's going to be the starting quarterback, I want him to feel comfortable running everything. So I would throw everything at him right now.
No, I think
especially against Vanderbilt, when, you're not worried about losing that game.
Bro, I think the things he's been good at has been the read action, play action off of that stuff. Like his big throws have been big runs, have been runs, and also play action off of like the runs and stuff. So I'm not like I think running in between the tackles is gonna keep defenses honest, and then he's gonna get some 1-on-1 matchups to be able to throw the ball down the field, and that's what we want. That's how Tebow thrived. He wasn't the most prolific passer, but his run game just got us in situations where you had to unload the box, and we got 1-on-1 situations with some really good wide receivers. So I just think that's the recipe. That basic foundation is how this offense is gonna go. We need to forget about last year and try to keep up passing stats. We're playing in the box, bro.
Yeah, I would. I agree with Silk and Nick. We'll call you collectively Nilk in this case. And both in their case. I think my biggest question mark is what is Anthony Richardson's differentiator when you put him into the game, when Dan Mullen puts him into the game? Because right now you're not letting him run a full offense, but you're also putting him in a position where Emory Jones can do a lot of those same things. So it's why sit your starting quarterback to put in the backup quarterback, if you will, to run the same things that you would have otherwise, right? Where's the difference maker? Where's the play that you're putting Anthony Richardson or the drive that you're putting Anthony Richardson in for? Because if it's just to do the same thing Emory Jones would do, then I would rather just have Emory Jones do that, right? Unless you're going to be diverse in your play calling, unless you're going to call specific plays for him and have him run a certain type of offense when he's in there. But other than that, if you're just putting him in to just run the exact same thing Emory Jones is doing, then why put him in?
Yeah, I'm just waiting to see the two quarterback system Dan talked about, because he said he had one, and I haven't seen it yet. We're heading into LSU week, so I don't see a system. I just don't see a guy that can run two quarterback anything. But I think the difference in both of those guys is they both can run, but obviously Anthony Richardson can jump over people and get to the end zone faster. He's more explosive. He's just a bigger threat in the run game. So I think in between the tackles is something that he do different than Emory Jones. So back to what Dan was saying, what can he do different than Emory? I think run between the tackles and straight at people. I think goal line packages need to be 15 regardless. We were struggling in the red zone. And I think we can answer that by getting like the advantage, not trying to slide into the end zone, but just run into that wall. You know, I think Emory gets down there and gets a little cute. He's trying to slither his way in there. When we just need to just bulldoze some people over at the goal line.
It hasn't made sense. We've talked about it before. You get down to the goal line and, you know, you put Malik Davis in. He's had a good season, but you've got Malik Davis and Emory Jones there. And it's like, hey, you've got a 240-pound quarterback and a 5'8" in cleats, 230-pound running back. Like, why isn't that your goal line backfield?
Yeah, right. No, you're right. You know, the Gators have.
I say hand it off to Dez. That's what I say.
I think Spencer would agree with you there. The Gators have scored 24 times in the when they've gotten down into the red zone. But so, like you said, it's not pretty. It seems like there's a personnel deficiency when they do get down there. So.
How do you feel? How do you guys feel about Emory's overall performance? I know the stat line looks okay. I don't think he had a bad day on the box score, but it was. He missed a wide open Rick Wells that should have been probably a touchdown. That was a little egregious. He just hit a miss, so he'll miss wide open throws like that, and then he'll drop it down to Whitmore. So what was y'all?
Yeah, thinking? that Whitmore. I mean, that's a Sunday throw. You put that, inside. You know, you drop that through the sunroof of a car into his hands there. But then, I mean, just an inexcusable miss to Rick Wells. There's a couple passes where if it's a good pass and he leads the guy, it's a touchdown. And instead, the receiver's almost coming to a full stop to turn around and wait for the ball. Like you're playing 500 in the backyard. And I see some of that. So, it goes for like a 42-yard gain, and it looks good on the stats. But if you're sitting there watching it, you're thinking, all right, well, that could have been – a 60-yard touchdown instead of a 42-yard pass.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest thing is you can look at the stats, like Silk said, and this is no slight at Emory Jones. You look at him and you're like, wow, that's, a couple hundred yards passing, couple touchdowns. He had that dime throw for the touchdown. you know, but Nick, you said it, and he seems to not throw his guys open and wait for the route to either be complete or wait till they're at a full stop before throwing the ball. And yes, against a team like Vanderbilt, you might be able to get the yards that you want, or the, you know, the yards after catch, but there's no, I guess, continuity of a player running in their route. Not there's none, but often there's not the, you know, players in full stride when he gets hit, and that, you know, 15 yard gain, you know, can turn into 30, 40, 50, you know, quicker. But you can't do that against your Georgias. You can't do those against your prolific defenses where players aren't going to be as wide open as they are running against a Vanderbilt or an FAU or USF. So, well, with that being said, boys, do want to ask you one question before we do that. The Gators do remain ranked 20th in the AP poll. Gators broke out retro jerseys for the third year in a row against during homecoming. The first year they had the white helmets, last year they had the blue helmets, and this year they had the orange helmets, all with different retro logos. Quickly, which one was y'all's favorite?
During Saturday, I like that. Those are smooth. I like those. I'm not gonna lie. Nick, you're muted, sir.
I think I got thrown off by the helmet. It didn't have the stripe. But I like that helmet with the interlocking UF. I think my favorite was the first one, the white helmet.
Less is more. I like that, Joe. I ain't gonna lie.
I loved the coach's polo that they had. I loved everything about the branding for this this weekend. But I think I'm going to agree with you, Nick. I like the first ones the most, probably the second. But I think that throwback uniform is probably one of my favorites. I'm not trying to be a homer here, but one of my favorites in all of college football.
You shot it real well. Say if they had that in the Bama game, they would have won.
He said that what your Gator collective?
Yeah. Shout out to Rick Wells. I know you wanted to get. They should have replayed my man touchdown because that was a touchdown. We got some terrible refs in the SEC. So he had an opportunity at two touchdowns that were kind of screwed over. Man, shout out to Rick Wells. He's having a productive senior season.
I just want to see Rick Wells score touchdowns so Mark Long has to type his name out every single time.
Don't let the SEC like league office hear this podcast. Silk's gonna get us fined. Talking about officiating.
Can't find me.
Even when the fans storm the field, it's still the university that has to pay, right?
Right.
Well, let's get into LSU talk. We got Brody Miller with The Athletic on, but before we do that, let's give a shout out to our friends over at Home Field Apparel, my favorite place to buy retro University of Florida Gator gear. But also they have dozens and dozens of brands for maybe a spouse, a loved one, that way we went to a different university, or maybe you cheer for another school besides the University of Florida. Check them out, Home Field Apparel. Use promo code Stadium and Gelf, get 15% off of your order. Again, Home Field Apparel, softest shirts in all the land, great retro throwback shirts and all the like. I know that all three of us love them and love wearing them. The Gators will enter Baton Rouge for a 11 o'clock local time against LSU. The Gators right now sit at 10.5-point favorites with an over-under of 59. We'll get Brody Miller on here to talk about a depleted LSU roster. So, Brody, man, it's a pleasure to have you back on. Brody, I guess talk to us a little bit about everything that's going on with LSU's roster that seems to be depleting by the minute right now.
Yeah, where do I start, I guess, right? I think it's as messy as a situation as I've seen, quite frankly. I mean, you start with the 2 years of on the field results, just constant decline. Then you move to the constant injuries. And yeah, like you said, they're pretty depleted right now. I mean, they're at the point, I want to say off the top of my head, 8 to 10 like major starters are out on what would have been the opening day roster. And quite frankly, not even just starters, but, you know, I don't know, five of the best players on the whole team, but that's not why they're losing by any means. I mean, they top to bottom issues, and then Ed Ogeron drama off the field. Now he's looking like, you know, his end is quite near. So yeah, I don't even know where to begin, but it's an absolute mess, and Florida is getting them at a pretty good time.
We got them a good time last year, Brody.
Brody, let me. Yeah, you asked where we start. LSU receiver Kayshon. Is it Boutte?
Yes.
Was announced that he's out for the season. He had 13 touchdowns, pardon me, in his last 8 games. He's going to join Allie Yeh, Joseph Evans, Major Burns, Derek Stingley, Andre Anthony, Todd Harris, John Emery, and a number more that will be out for this game or for the rest of the season. So where does that leave LSU, not only going in against the game against Florida, but for the rest of the season?
In trouble. I mean, yeah, I I think even the healthiest version of this team just quite frankly wasn't operating like a team that was going to come near its potential. I mean, they were almost near, pretty healthy for the UCLA game, and you still saw glaring issues with the offensive line. This offensive line, quite frankly, just kind of is what it is. And you saw the glaring issues with the defense already at times. And yeah, there was some optimism from the Mississippi State game and stuff. But now you are at a point where, all right, the one true dynamic playmaking option, you have the entire, I mean, they have really good freshman players, receivers, got some good skill players, no doubt about it. But the only like week to week, just true, reliable player, Kayshon Boutte, he's gone for the season. So a lot of really good pieces there. A lot of guys who might break out like Boutte did last year. You know, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked at all if a Deion Smith or a Malik Nabers or a Brian Thomas, Jack Besh, those guys are, it's a loaded freshman receiver class that all might be great, but they're freshmen. I think, my experience, they're going to have great moments. They're also just not going to be as consistent week to week. So you have that. And on defense, Derek Stingley was already the biggest loss you could imagine, maybe the best corner in the country, but And they've been doing okay without him. Dwight McLaughlin's a solid player. Eli Ricks is a solid player, all these things. But now even Ricks is banged up. And Ogeron still thinks he should be able to play, but he had to come out of the last game. So if he's out, I mean, they are, quite frankly, disastrous at corner after those top guys. So that's a major thing to watch. And they're without two major safeties. I know I just keep going and going, but they have, the freshman class is really good. A lot of talent who can do some good stuff, but there's just very little reliability from this roster top to bottom right now. And the pass, I didn't even mention Ali Gay. The pass rush was like the clear strength of this defense this year, and you lose your two starting edge rushers and Andre Anthony and Ali Gay, and BJ Ojulari is fantastic, Mason Smith is a freak, but still you are just slowly whittling down everything that was ever a strength for you. So it's still a talented team, but it's one without really an identity, if that makes sense.
So you've been drinking a lot this season.
Not as much as LSU fans, but yeah, quite a bit.
It's really interesting to me, probably less interesting for you because you kind of get so wrapped into, the day-to-day stuff. But just from the outside, I mean, the ride that LSU football team and Ed Orgeron gave LSU fans, that 2019 season, magical, and just like how quickly we've gotten to the point. I read your story today, and you're, basically saying, hey, we're watching – the last act of Orgeron at LSU. And it's like, how does it happen so quickly to go from an undefeated national championship season to, 18 months later, you're talking about this guy's going to be, looking for a job soon.
Yeah, and I'll have eventually, some point whenever this all goes down, a deeper story on how this all happened, because it is wild because, the Chizik comparison comes up a lot, and it's always going to. I'm not going to deny it, but I don't even think that's fair because Chizik was – you can tell me if you disagree, but that was Newton, Fairley, Dyer, and then a weak roster the rest. And it all felt very just like, hey, you just got not lucky by no means, but you know what I mean. This was, I think it was earned. Like, I think all the stuff that we gave Ogeron credit for, I actually 2 years later still give him credit for. He did a lot of things to fix what Miles had going there. He did that 2017 recruiting class. His first class is an all-time class. I mean, there was a deep top-to-bottom roster with a really strong culture, really strong hires. I know he didn't hire Randa, but he hired the rest. A lot to really give him credit for. And even 2018 was a good season, so the one hit wonder thing doesn't quite work. And then all of a sudden, you just saw this. The way I always put it is if 2019 was a perfect storm, I think everything since has been a perfect storm for how things can go wrong. And that's not taking blame away, but I would also, but you had the pandemic, then you had in a year where you're losing 20 starters and Ogeron is quite frankly getting divorced. So that hasn't helped, the overall situation there. And this is not taking blame away from him, but it's putting it in a situation that I don't think Ed Ogeron was a good enough coach and leader of this team to recover from. And that is where the blame goes back on him. And that is where they are now at a point where 2 years later, it's not just that the results aren't great because, I think there are plenty of coaches, if you took a hit the 2 years after a title, you're still okay. It's not just that. It's the trending direction that it's going. It looks like it's going to get worse. Mm-hmm. And it's the off-the-field issues on top of that, of course. It's just this slow whittling away of all the things that he did so well to get them to 2019. The culture's not the same. The character's not the same. The hires have been disastrous a good amount. And then you don't have the same accountability and leadership they had in 2019. A lot of their best players are younger players. It's all the things that they actually deserve credit for are no longer true. And that's, I think, how you get where they are.
Bro, I want to ask you some questions about the game, but I like what we're talking about right now. Since we're talking about
you're talking about the demise of LSU's entire football program, so it's like I wanted to talk about the game, but let's run that back.
Yeah, seriously, the second team corner.
Yes, I love a good football soap opera. That's my bag. Who do we hire? I'm an LSU fan right now, so who are we looking for, Brody?
Yeah, I mean that's such a great
Jimbo
question.
Fisher again.
I mean, let's put it this way: he's up there. I do think he's somebody that Scott Woodward's going to look at. He's obviously the guy who brought him to Texas A&M, and Jimbo Fisher has, quite frankly, always been interested in the LSU job. I would be surprised if it's him. I do, just the situation, the extension, all that stuff. I just don't know if that this is the time for that. But you know, I think Scott Woodward, I will lead with saying, is a really tough man to know his thinking. He's very cards close to the vest. So I will admit all of this is, you know, things you're hearing and speculation a little bit, but I think guys like James Franklin are going to be high on that list, the Penn State, but you're probably going to be fighting with USC for him. I think Lane Kiffin is going to be on that list, which I know will get a lot of people both excited and angry. And then you got your like Luke Fickles and guys like that who might be great hires, but they're probably not going to come down to the SEC or are waiting for a different job or things like that. So Scott Woodward has a history of making, I mean, probably more than anyone in sports, the biggest name hires, just in terms of the context of his situation. You know, he's the guy who brought Jimbo, the guy who got Sark to Washington first, and then the guy who brought Chris Peterson to Washington, the guy who got Kim Mulkey. I know it's women's basketball, but he's the guy who got Kim Mulkey from Baylor, which is, you know, massive. So he loves big names, maybe to a fault. So I think you're going to see him go big game hunting, which is why, you know, a Billy Napier at Louisiana, who might be a fantastic hire. I just don't know if that's where Scott Woodward would want to go. But again, it's so speculatory at this point. I don't truly know.
I mean, they're paying Jimbo with like Egyptian gold in College Station. Like, I think you're going to have, I mean, I don't know what you would have to promise,
but there's no Jimbo buyout. Fish.
That's true. You have to give Jimbo Amazon.
Yes. No, you're absolutely right.
Get him out of there.
Brody, how important, obviously Louisiana is a very strong culture. LSU has a very strong culture, cultural tie-ins that a lot of universities don't have. How important is that fit culturally when it comes to hiring that, or is that kind of overthought about?
No, it's valid. I mean, it's a large part of Ed Ogeron, you know, but I don't think it's, I think it's something, it's not everything, you know, where the most successful coach in the history of that school was Nick Saban, and he is the least Louisiana person you could imagine, and, you know, and Les Miles probably did fit the culture, but still, even that, so he's not from there, anything like that. I don't think they would do that again. I don't think they would lean too hard into that again. And Scott Woodward is a Louisiana guy, so it's incredibly possible, and even the Jimbo angle, which again, I agree with Nick, I don't think that's happening, but even the Jimbo angle, a lot of LSU ties with him, so there's, it's something. I just don't know if they would ever let that dictate such a important hire.
Well, I guess, Selk, I know you didn't want to get into it, but I guess it's time for us to get into the game this weekend.
Yeah.
What are you expecting to see out of LSU? I guess just pregame, fans, attendance, the excitement and energy around the team right now. Where are we at as an LSU fan base going into this game against Florida?
Not great. And the fact that it was already setting up for a game where, you know, you're not going to get a great crowd, just the situation, of course. Then you add in it's an 11 a.m. kick, which I don't know any fan base is more angry about than LSU's drunken fan base who wants to be tailgating for 12 hours. So, I mean, Florida's up there, maybe. But I think there's danger of this being a really embarrassing crowd. You know, I almost wonder if it's going to be a 50, 60% crowd because of all these reasons we're mentioning. And even back to the Ogeron conversation, like, you know, just a theory. I almost wonder if that will be kind of the final thing that makes Scott Woodward realize it's time, is that when you see the fan apathy, you might just have to, you know, because I don't think he wants to do it in season. He's trying to avoid it all he can, but I think that's a real thing. So, and I could be totally wrong, but right now ticket prices are dropping. They're by no means close to sold out. So I do think it's going to be a weaker crowd.
That's, I think that's always, you know, having covered several coaches at Florida, I think that's always kind of the big signifier, because angry fans still show up. They still buy tickets. You know, they'll yell at you. But, you know, when people just start becoming apathetic and you lose, you know, even anger in the program, I think that's, you know, when tough decisions become easier and get executed.
Yeah, to steal a line from Andy Staples, I think it was, but I think he was wrote about the Florida State situation with Taggart, and he said, it's not about when you can afford to hire the coach. It's about sometimes when you can't afford not to, and I think that's that exact situation.
with all of the players that are out, obviously LSU has recruited quite well over the last, you know, 3, 4, 5 years now, have a stable of highly ranked 3-stars, 4-stars, and 5-star guys. With all of these names being out, who are some names that, that Florida fans should be looking at or maybe researching going into this game?
Yeah, absolutely. I think receivers, like, and we touched on this earlier, but I think that's going to be a really interesting one just because the talent is totally there. So I think names they should know are the Malik Nabers, who had a, even though it was 35-7, so don't get me wrong, but had an unreal catch toward the end of the Kentucky game. And he's a guy they loved all camp and got hurt, and he's finally back. So he's somebody to watch. I'm not sure Deion Smith's health. I think that's kind of iffy, but he's looked really good at times this season. And Jack Besh, a very low-rated guy who's just been a full-time starter, is their pretty much full, their number one third down position, I mean, possession guy, all that. He's one who will absolutely be a large part of the game plan. So watch for those guys offensively. I think defensively, and again, Eli Ricks is falls in the category, but geez, I don't know his status, but, you know, he's an All-American corner and a guy who, you know, when he's on his game, can make plays as well as anyone. And he'll probably make some mistakes too, but I think the number one guy to get to know is Mason Smith, and they might already know him, but, you know, five star who looks like he's built in a Madden creator player. You know, he's just a, it's like 6'6", 291 right now. And just, he's playing D tackle and D end, especially now with the D ends out. It's pretty wild what he's doing. So especially after the Gay injury, I really think he will be just highlighted in that defensive game plan. And just one other I threw out there is Jay Ward, you know, who Florida is familiar with. He had some great plays in that game last year, but he's the, I believe he's the one who caught that nonsensical double deflection off the helmet interception. Yeah. Which is one of the dumber plays we've all watched, but I think he's a guy to get to know because he's just a rangy playmaker who can kind of disrupt things.
You got more, I don't have a whole lot of takes, questions about this game. How do you feel about Florida's offensive line and your pass rush?
Well, yeah, I think this pass rush, again, the injuries are going to factor in there, but the pass rush has been very good when it's healthy. I mean, or even when it's not healthy, they're really deep there. You know, the numbers are messed up now because in the Mississippi State game, they pretty much just rushed 2 or 3 all game. So it's like not going to look quite indicative, but they have a really talented pass rush, both interior and on the edge, you know, where B.J. Ojulari is as good as a pass rusher as there is in the SEC, brother of Aziz, Georgia. Glenn Logan's back, you know, basically a 4-year starter who's missed the whole season so far. He's going to be back. Neil Farrell's a disruptor. And then Mason Smith, of course. They have a lot of guys up front who aren't great run block defenders, quite frankly. I think LSU's front four could be a lot better in run defense, but are really aggressive pass rushers. And I won't pretend to be an expert on Florida's, you know, pass protection or anything like that, but that is probably something else you has to lean on here.
I wanted to ask about Max Johnson. Dan was very complimentary of him today. Just how's his progression been going? Obviously, you know, tough to be the quarterback of a team, you know, with as many injuries as you're talking about. But only a sophomore, true sophomore, or a redshirt sophomore?
Yep. Yeah, true sophomore. It's been one of the hardest, and you know as well as I, sometimes just so hard to figure out if a quarterback's good or bad. It's like the most complicated part of our job, I think. But it's been impossible to figure out because so much context surrounding him has gone against him. The offensive line is a train wreck, and then they're literally averaging 2.5 yards a carry for most of the season. So there is just, I mean, it's mind-boggling how much they can't run the ball. So then they're 100% one-dimensional, so Johnson's even tougher situations. And he's had drops around him, so it's like he hasn't looked great, I'll be clear. But I also think he's making sometimes more than what's there. He is overall a pretty composed guy, can do some good things. He's also a guy who underthrows a lot of deep balls. I mean, there was some even just Saturday where Trey Palmer was wide open downfield for 20 yards. And he underthrows him by 15 yards and almost was picked off. And there was an interception in the Auburn game that was the same thing, just underthrows an open guy on a deep route. So I think that's a big flaw of his. And you're noticing the effect of that pressure get on him all the time because you're seeing him get a little jumpier, you're seeing a lot of this like off-platform jumpy throws when there's not even that much pressure on him, and you're missing misses because of that. It basically cost him the Auburn game when he just flat out missed an open receiver on third down, just 10 yards away. So because he tried to like jump throw it, I think. So it's my long answer made short is I think he does a lot of great things. He's really sharp and smart, good processor, all that stuff you love to hear about. And I think he's good enough to win the mini game. He's good enough to win it. I just don't think he's at the point where he's the kind of guy who can overcome other stuff. He's not going to, you know, go hero mode. So if Florida can get pressure on him, I'm not sure what he's going to do. And actually, one other thing to mention, there's been this really noticeable trend lately of starts incredibly. First quarter against Auburn had like 150 yards. Eight of eight against Kentucky for like 90. Looks really good early. And then once teams can adjust to them not running the ball, they're so simple. Yeah, they just go downhill.
We've got no adjustments.
If he's a fast starter, look out Saturday. He might have 200 passing yards before the first quarter's over before they figure something out.
Yeah.
So Florida's front four, they have a good front seven, but the front four specifically has been able to get a lot of pressure. How does the running backs, I guess, get factored into the passing game? Because that's an area where Florida's really struggled with missed tackles in space, and teams have been going with that quick pass, quick slants, passes into the flats to kind of negate that pass rush. Is that something LSU has done or can do?
Yeah, it's a great question because it's something Jake Pete's offensive coordinator had really wanted to do, and they have just failed at it, I think, quite frankly. Part of that, John Emery's been suspended all season, who would have been their starting running back, five-star playmaker, who was, you know, again, like, they, I don't know, I was going to mention they wanted him to be their Christian McCaffrey, but I'm not even giving that the time of day. But he was going to be that threat, that playmaker and all that. So I think that was gone. And then Ty Davis Price is the more veteran starter, but that is not his skill set. He's a truer power back. And then they have some freshmen who are going to be stars eventually in the SEC, I think, and Armani Goodwin and Corey Kiner, but they bring that. They can, but they're not there yet. So it hasn't been what they wanted it to be, and I think they were really hoping that was going to be a part of it. They haven't been able to. So now they're basically, to get that, what you're saying, that quick passing game, they're trying to rely on, you know, receiver screens to Kayshon Boutte. Well, one, he's gone, but two, those haven't even worked. They're trying to rely on a lot of quick slants and things like that. Like, their only way to have created quick passing game has been through Boutte. So now you are really in trouble there. So I think that's something Florida can probably contain.
All right, Brody. Well, let's get into what you think end of the game. What does LSU need to do to win this game? Then what do you think that will have gone wrong if they lose the game? And then maybe give us a score prediction if you get into that.
Absolutely, yeah. I think if LSU wants a chance in this game, it just has zero choice but to run the football. And I think you saw in the Kentucky game, the one weird positive on the worst night of the season was they were finally moving the ball on the ground a little bit. If they can do that against Florida, which I'm not optimistic about, but if they can, yeah, that opens a lot up. It makes life easier for Johnson. It gives them something considering their best receivers out. It's really the only hope, I would argue, because I think the defense might be okay. I think the defense has some good stuff, it does. But if they can't run the ball, this game's over from the first quarter. And yeah, to answer the second part, I think if it goes wrong, if the offensive line plays like it has all season, it eliminates LSU from games almost immediately. So I think that's it. And then the other thing I'd point out is Jarontae Jones has had some great games as a defensive coordinator, but the two where he looks like a disaster is when he's faced pretty sharp offensive minds. Liam Cohen made him look like a fool at times, and Chip Kelly made him look like a fool at times. And I think Dan Mullen, if anyone, is going to be a master at figuring out how to, you know, just take advantage and find openings and misdirect them. So I have a gut feeling Dan Mullen might out-scheme Jarontae Jones in this one. So my gut says, I don't know, Florida by 14 or 15.
Real quick, right. Brody, what's your opinion of the SEC West? Do you think anybody can upseat Bama this year?
Yeah, I think the chance is probably gone now that Alabama just destroyed Ole Miss. That was the only one that really had that real chance to do it. I know A&M just did, but they also have two pretty bad losses. So I don't see A&M really getting up there. LSU's not doing it. State's not doing it. And obviously Arkansas technically can, but I don't see that. I don't think that's a good matchup, bunch of reasons. So my thing with the West is I think it's the deepest I've ever – I mean, honestly, the deepest I've ever seen it, because usually Arkansas is the bottom feeder or Mississippi State's the bottom feeder or Ole Miss. There's no – I mean, LSU is technically the bottom feeder now, but even them, you know, they're going to give you a hard time. So it's a weird time at the West where there are just zero gimme games, none. But I don't – the second best is probably the weakest it's been in a little while. I think that might be the best way to put it. So – Ole Miss obviously is prop. They might lose one game all season. It might be the Bama game, but it was to Bama. So I think that's going to hurt them.
For any Gator fans heading to Baton Rouge, give me your local recommendations, watering holes, food to eat, Yeah. I love getting down to Louisiana just to eat.
Yeah, of course. No, I love, and it's not even that Louisiana food, but I love Elsie's Plate and Pie. It's basically like savory pies and stuff, and it's a wild menu, and I love it as much as any place in that town. I think BRQ is a really, really good spot, kind of a little further out northeast, but it's really good, great barbecue, but also just great overall food. But then if you want something kind of Louisiana, I mean, there's Louisiana Land Yap is a wonderful spot. Paran's is another great one. Those are some ones where you're going to get some really good kind of Louisiana food to kind of hit that, the check that box, for example. And then also go around the tailgate. Even if you don't know people, just walk around, introduce yourself. If you're nice, someone's going to probably want to give you some boudin or some jambalaya or something like that. They're pretty good about that. And that's kind of the best part about them.
The first time I went to Baton Rouge, I packed late, didn't realize what color button down that I'd packed. And everyone was so nice to me as I'm walking up. I get up to the press box, look down. I'm wearing a purple shirt. Don't know if that factored into everyone yelling Go Tigers at me as I walked into the stadium, but did have some good food on my walk in.
So yeah, it's real. I mean, they like want. I did a story on the tailgate scene like 2 months ago, just on the whole thing. And three different people unprovoked mentioned how like they feel an obligation when people come out of town to show what it can be. So they are so giving and so like, you know, hospitable because they want someone to leave and be able to say like, this was as good as people said it was. So they're actually like, I know there've been some horror stories about people going to LSU and I'm sure every fan base has those horror stories. Mm-hmm. I know that, but overall I'd say they're usually pretty helpful. They'll give you some food.
Well, you probably get what you put out. So if you anger them,
they will do awful things. But yeah.
If you walk up to somebody being a jackass, you're probably going to get a less than hospitable reaction in return. But I have experienced that where, listen, they put a lot of time into their tailgates, a lot of time into the food at the tailgates, and they want to share it. And if you're there tailgating, like Brody said, just be nice, and someone will give you some jambalaya. I don't know how good jambalaya is at 10 a.m.,
it's always good, jambalaya time.
It's probably always good. It's probably always good.
There's never a bad time for jambalaya.
Great for leftovers, and so I've been told.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Time or
two. I love it. Well, Brody, thanks so much for joining us tonight. Let everybody know where they can follow you on Twitter and social media and where they can read your outstanding coverage of LSU.
Absolutely, yeah. Thanks, guys, for having me. You can follow me at Brody A. Miller on Twitter. And if you go to theathletic.com/holdthatpodcast, I think you can get like 50% off a subscription right now. So check us out there. And yeah, in all seriousness, it's one of my favorite shows to go on, guys. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, brother. Well, we appreciate you so much for coming on. We will we'll see you next year.
All right. Brody, I'll see you Friday.
Yeah, see you Friday, man.
Bye, nice.
Bro. Have fun, boys.
Boys about to hang out. Where you going that Friday, Nick? You got some plans?
See, I don't know. So I don't listen. This is 32-year-old Nick. I've learned Zach Albaverde is like, hey, we're staying in New Orleans on Friday night. And I was like, absolutely not. I won't make it to the game Saturday. I'll probably still be, you know, on Bourbon Street by the time kickoff happens if I was out. And so I'm going up Friday night to Baton Rouge. I'll probably see Brody, go maybe get some dinner. I enjoy Baton Rouge. Nice little town.
Nice. I got to make it this. That game is definitely on my bucket list. This year wasn't the year to go, though.
It's really – so I've been to every stadium except
especially which at 11 o'clock. They're Arkansas. Terrible. You know, like I don't think it's the tailgate vibes I want on my part of my bucket list. I want it to be a big, epic game.
No, you need a night game. You need a night game at Death Valley. I've been to – I think other than Auburn and Georgia, I've been to every stadium. And that one is really Neyland gets a little bit loud. Bryant Denny was loud, but Death Valley is, I think, the one that really truly rivals the Swamp in terms of how loud it can get. And I've only been there one night, for one night game. But yeah, that's definitely a bucket list thing. If you haven't been to Death Valley for a Florida LSU game, you should try to make it happen. But I agree with you, Silk. 11 a.m. local. As they're getting ready to fire a coach, and Florida's already pretty much eliminated, probably not the year.
They might be looking for a face to punch.
Or it could be the best tailgate experience in the world because the people that are there already know that they're going to probably lose or, you know, aren't they don't care as much about the other game as much as they do about having a good tailgate.
And the Swamp people got vegan options or no?
Listen, I don't, like I said, if you show up and you're being a jackass, you're gonna get some bad attitudes back. You walk up to somebody who's been slaving away over food. They've been tailgating for 12 hours, and you're like, "Hey, you got like vegan options?"
And then they respond. Rah, 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 rah.
Just out. You're gone.
That's verbatim.
Like, sorry, Cookie Monster.
I think if you translate that, it's sorry, options. Sir. We don't have any tofu. Would you like something else? I believe that's my rough translation of what Soak just said. Oh, I love it.
Speaking of AO.
Quick dandy fact before we get into the next part of our show. The lower team or the unranked team has won 4 of the last 5 games in this series. So hopefully the Gators can reverse that trend. Let's give a quick shout out to our friend over at Game Time Sidekicks. Silk, I'm not sure if you checked your mail. If you got it the other day, Nick, I'm sure you did. But we got some tumblers in from Game Time Sidekicks. And boy, oh boy, are they an outstanding product. So shout out to them. Use promo code STADIUM, get 10% off. So just check your mail. It's there. It's with your home field shirts.
Home field, they left a note and they took it to some pickup place. And it's not on my side of town, really.
Yeah, I got you. Well, check out Game Time Sidekicks. Over 350 different options for schools, golf, a whole lot of different things. Vacuum insulated, really great solid product, beautifully designed. I was very, very impressed by the other folks over there at Game Time Sidekick. So use promo code STADIUM, get 10% off of your order. Big news in the Gators football program, or minor news, however you view it, Elijah Blades it was announced today that Elijah Blades was dismissed from the program. So the one-time Florida Gator, let me see if I get this right, the one-time Florida Gator commit that ended up going to Nebraska,
right,
who then transferred to JUCO, who then said that he was going to go to Oregon, who then decided to go to Texas A&M,
right,
who then sat out for a year last year because of COVID, who mm-hmm. then finally announced that he was going to commit to the Gators, enrolls a few weeks later, plays 3 full games with the University of Florida. Did I get that right?
It's a nice track record. I like it. He's consistent.
He's consistently inconsistent, which is not what you want to be as a football player.
Go ahead, finish. I'm gonna shoot a take afterwards.
That's all. Other than just announcing.
Oh, that's it. That's all. Just that.
Corey, the floor is yours.
I am confused because I thought we should have went out to Tyreek Stevenson. Tyreek Stevenson is a kid I know wanted to come to the University of Florida. And I know we had a need at the cornerback spot. So I'm confused at watching Tyreek. I don't think Tyreek's all world, but he's probably the best player in Miami secondary and definitely better than Elijah Blades. While Marshall is playing well, I don't get the Blades take if they didn't want to take Tyreek Stevenson. I just think that's a little off in my mind.
Yeah,
that's it. That's all.
Count me in the camp where I said I didn't think that Elijah Blades, and this isn't me being right. I never want to be right at a person's non-success here, but I thought that his track record was very wonky. I questioned, based on a lot of things that I read about him, his desire to play football at this level and commit to beyond just playing football. So certainly wish the young man the best of luck. Definitely a big question mark. I think that our general take when he finally enrolled was you have an open scholarship, take him. But if you missed out on a player that could have been more impactful for your secondary, then why not go after, the more proven player? And I thought that Tyreek Stevenson was not only the better prospect coming out of high school, was certainly more proven at Georgia. There was definitely some other options that were out there in the transfer portal. So I questioned it from the beginning, but certainly am not stomping on his grave at all.
He didn't count against the 85 because he was a graduate that came in using or taking advantage of that extra year. I just think he's got a lot of growing up to do. You walk out on your team on a game day in your sixth year of college. wishing the best of luck, but that's probably not the the person you want to share a locker room with.
Yeah, that's sweet.
If that's how it's going down.
That's sweet. I don't understand, like, quitting like that. Like, what are you going to do now? Like, like the mindset is just a little off, in my opinion. When he got on the field, he was just like a penalty waiting to happen. When he did get on the field, and he was injured. I don't understand what he could be possibly upset at. It's a good opportunity for him, but I don't know what he does right now. I don't see NFL drafting his future at all. So
no,
I don't know why he would just quit like that.
You had a prime opportunity, right? I mean, outside of Kyrie Elam, you had Jaden Hill go down before the start of the season. So you have Avery Helm, who didn't get much playing time before. You have Jadarius Perkins, who didn't get any playing time, you know, because being in JUCO. You have Jason Marshall, who's a freshman. So there was ample opportunity for you to earn your spot on the field. And I know he didn't come in until late, which again, you know, had question marks about why he enrolled so late. But that was rife of opportunity for somebody to come in and make an impact. And, you know, it's unfortunate that it didn't work out.
Quit. Like, who quits? Yeah. Like, who quits like that? Middle of the season, it's like, it's just a coward way to go out. Finish what you started, you know? Right. It says a lot about a lot of people. Nick, you're right. It's just like, you got a lot of growing up to do. That's all. You just got to be men about situations. Start something, finish it.
Yep. Other news, Kadarius Toney went off. And then went off at the end of the game by punching a player. But he, 10 receptions, 189 receiving yards in the Giants game on Sunday, which set a Florida Gators rookie wide receiver record, which the number of wide receivers the University of Florida has put into the NFL over the last 50 years. It's an incredible stat. So congratulations to Kadarius Toney. And in other news, I'm not sure if you guys saw this, Kyle Pitts has now set the record for all-time tight end receiving yards in the first NFL game, or first five NFL games, pardon me, with 308. Number two on that list is Florida Gator Aaron Hernandez, and then number three on that list is also Florida Gator Jordan Reed. So joins a list of Gators there, but, I mean, Kyle Pitts went off in that game in London for the Atlanta Falcons.
International catcher of footballs, Kyle Pitts. Hey, drop that on the big three roll up, tight end you.
Yeah, I got that.
Just to see Larrion squirm a little bit. No, you know?
I
got that on
deck. I seen that tweeted over on Sunday, and I jotted that down. I bookmarked this. I gotta say that for the show. 100%.
All right, boys, before we get into prize picks and our picks, anything else you guys want to talk about? Anything else you got, want to get off the chest, if you will?
Who you firing, Nick? You firing somebody? You know you want to do it. Fire somebody. You got to fire one coach. Fire somebody.
I'm not firing anybody.
Oh, you scared.
I'm not firing anybody. I want to fire the U.S. government.
You're not firing nobody. I think I'm firing somebody, right? Like, I don't know.
I'm firing the government. Listen, hear me out.
Oh boy.
My guy Jeremy Crawshaw, here on a student visa. Can't take part in name, image, likeness because he's on a visa. My guy could be having Bloomin' Onion sent to his house on the daily and can't take advantage of it. He took a diplomatic approach, saying it's just a blessing to be here and getting the opportunity to, you know, get a college education and play some football along the way. But come on, give me an exemption. My guy needs to make some cash on the side.
No, I guess he can't. Never mind. I'm not going to even continue that take.
I just don't understand these rules. Like, why is there a rule that the Aussie kid can't, like, go make some bread? Like, why?
Yes.
Because that affects a lot of other sports too, right? Like your swimmers and gymnastics. Sure. You know, hockey and everything else where you have a large international presence. And I'm sure there has something to do with tax codes and things of that nature, but, you know, have them get a work visa. I don't know. I'm sure that there's things in the NCAA that they don't want to get into this worker employee type of situation at the university.
Well, it's on the horizon regardless.
All right. Well, hopefully it's during his career so we can see Jeremy Crawshaw on RT say, that's another Bloomin' Onion.
Here's one. They have Outback in his hometown in Australia.
Did you guys dive into the differences between?
I heard Outback's not Outback. Real like Australian food.
It was a couple dudes, a couple white dudes from Tampa that just like, hey, sure let's make a steakhouse and we'll just make it Australian themed. There's nothing inherently Australian about Outback Steakhouse.
They modeled it after Crocodile Dundee. That's a fun fact for you.
Right. Yeah. So it was interesting to find that there was an Outback in Emu Plains, Australia.
Ah. A beautiful town.
Playing like the Taco Plains. Bell in Mexico.
Oh my gosh. All right, boys.
Imagine guys, Taco Bell in Mexico. That's crazy.
There are Taco Bells in Mexico too, which is crazy.
No, because you're actually eating it though.
That's like hey. The that's like the Office episode when Michael's in New York and he's like, ah, getting a great New York slice, and the camera pans to Sbarro.
Yeah. Embarrassing. Australia has the best water. Thanks for that fact, Spencer.
Big facts.
Yeah, big Spencer facts. Big meat facts for the show.
Spence does not only ship big meat across the country. He does dispense with big facts.
So if this there now is confusion. So during StreamYard when we record this, there's a little chat function. Spencer's there doing our social media. And he mentioned that they had the best water, but there's a slight time delay in his answer. So he was talking that Taco Bell has the best water in Mexico. We assumed that he was talking about Outback in or right. Australia. So
right.
Sorry, we misunderstood your take, Spencer. But, well, now
it's great. It's great podcasting.
That's great material. Right there, right?
That's
why they pay us the big bucks. All right, boys. Speaking of getting paid the big bucks, let's give a shout out to our friends over at Prize Picks. Use promo code SG, get a $1-for-$1 match all the way up to $100 on your first deposit. You can bet in daily or you can wager, pardon me, in daily fantasy. You can mix and match sports. You can say, I think Emory Jones is going to throw for over 225 yards, and I think the Rays are going to score more than 5 runs in a game, for example. So check them out, prizepicks.com. Sign up, use promo code SG. Even if you just want to check it out, signing up helps us. So again, prizepicks.com, use promo code SG. All right, boys, as we get into the game, then our final predictions of the game, over under Anthony Richardson getting 10 plays against LSU.
I mean, come on. I think we all want to buy it. We all want to take the over.
Do we?
No,
I don't.
Not me.
I don't
not
want
me.
To take
no,
it.
No, no. I think we would like for that to be the case.
I've seen this. So I've seen this two QB system.
I don't agree
system.
With that either, Nick. So Nick,
I would like to see him get 15.
I'd like
to see him get a lot more. I like to see him go 50-50 against like whatever, you know. I like to see this thing really, really go. But it ain't about what we want. It's about what we know we're about to get. I'm out of money.
When has that ever stopped you? You just open up another line of credit, my dude.
Nah, man. I don't care if it's free money. I can't be just giving it away.
So it's going to be doing like 3 Brut Insurance ad reads. Like, what are you doing, man? He's like, we ran out of money. I had to keep buying some stuff.
I don't know, bro.
I'm going to go under. Under 10 plays for AR.
It's gonna be about 8 ugly ones. Plays that don't like make sense.
8 ugly plays. I'm gonna buy. I think that the Gators get out to a lead, and Anthony Richardson plays a predominant part of the fourth quarter. But I will say this caveat: if the game is closer than maybe 14 points, I think that Anthony Richardson gets less than 10 carries or less than 10 plays.
Yeah, I think they're just gonna fucking kill us with. The running backs in the flats and the drag routes and like that has just been open all game. And I just think our like safety and who they're regarding the slot wide receivers put in a bad position of trying to cover that. So I think this game is gonna be close. I don't think we should smoke this team, but it may end up being close, man, just because how Dan Mullen been playing this shit and calling the game.
All right, let's see. Anthony Richardson. Pardon me. Emory Jones had the most run attempts last week with 17. Anthony Richardson, he only had 2. I'm sorry. I was toggling the wrong thing. Damian Pierce led the team with 7 attempts last week for 23 yards. Naquan Wright had 7 attempts for 46. Gators end up getting 192 yards total rushing against Vanderbilt. Buy or sell, a single running back gets more than 10 carries. A running back, not the quarterbacks, but a running back gets more than 10 carries in the game. Mm. And if so, who?
Yeah, I'm selling.
Oh, man.
We've turned a prolific buyer into a prolific
seller. If anybody gets, like, hot, we know, like, when you get hot, you just got to take a break because now you just got the streets on fire. So Dan Mullen going to rest you if you get hot because he don't want you to get the streets on fire. So 10 is going to be hard to get because even if you're good, you can't get 10 on a good day.
I'm trying to think. Like, when was the last time a running back had 10? Did you have to go back to, like, USF, I think?
No, Nick. That I was just looking it up. I had a feeling you were going to ask. Malik Davis had 10 against Tennessee.
Okay.
Week two, you had no. And week one, you had 14 by Malik Davis. And in week three, you had 10 by Malik Davis. So Malik Davis is your only running back that has gotten 10 plus carries in a game.
Yeah, I'm with Silk. I'm selling.
Okay. Well, I'll buy. I think that Naquan Wright is going to get more than 10 carries in this game. I think that Florida is going to be able to move the ball, not necessarily at will, but I think that they're going to be able to move the ball down the field against a very depleted LSU team. I don't think that they're going to score super quick because I do think LSU is talented enough to stop some of the big breakaways. So I think that Florida is going to score, but they're going to slow a little score, which is going to allow more rushing attempts and allow Naquan Wright to get 10, 11. He's going to get 11 rushes.
That's very positive of you, Dan. I like it.
I need Ben to keep me honest on that one.
Shout out to Naquan Feet, bro. Like, I'm just like, super impressed by, like, the nifty footwork that your man is displaying this fall. Keep doing what you're doing. I hope he gets 10 carries, but I don't foresee it, Dan. Like,
yeah,
he's looking too good out there. You don't want to actually, like, move the ball consistently and no shit like that, Dan.
That's a good point. What would we talk about, right?
Yeah, like, you got to keep it interesting, man.
Oh, my gosh. All right, let's get into to turnovers. The Gators end up with two interceptions against Vanderbilt. They also threw for two interceptions. The Gators sit at -3 on turnover margin this season with 6 total turnovers gained, 9 total lost. Obviously, if you're adding 3 to that number, buy or sell, the Gators continue their streak of interceptions in a game with 1+ interceptions against LSU. Nick, we'll start with you.
I just want to buy something. I'll say buy. I'll buy that. I'll buy it. I don't feel great about it. But, you know, we'll just throw some Monopoly money out there. We'll buy it.
You can't treat this like it's petty cash, Nick. You can't treat this like it's your Embers tab, you know?
That's not petty cash. That's have to go again this week, too. So, yeah.
Man, tough life.
Maybe I should have sold it.
Yeah. So.
What was the buy or sell again?
Yeah, no, I got you. Buy or sell, the Gators get an interception.
An interception. These quarterbacks stink. But we just not have been like, I got to buy something, so I'm going to buy it.
You can buy it.
What's our update? And I haven't even inquired about my man, Kyrie. What's our update on Kyrie?
Dan said he's 100% ready to go, so there might be a surgery coming soon.
Yeah, right. He might do something, get an interception, so we got to get some rest.
Might be getting his arm amputated, who knows, but right now he's 100%. Until game time, who knows, right?
Yeah, right.
Things magically change at game time. I'm going to buy. I think the Gators are going to force Max Johnson to throw 2 interceptions. I like 1 cornerback interception. Then I like a linebacker to get an interception just to
try. My man, Hop. Hop almost was my spirit animal of the week this week, but Rashard Torrance kind of took the cake. But Hopper's looking good at linebacker. He's not looking perfect. He's making some mistakes out there, but I like the way he's flying around with some aggression.
Yeah, I'm going to look real quick here. Sorry for the quick Tyrone delay Hopper. Here.
Big Hop.
In this game, you finally saw So Avery Helm played most of the game. He had the most snaps on the entire defense with 81. I thought that he held it down pretty well in that game. But in this game, you finally saw Derek Wingo get his most snaps in his career. Jalen Lee got the most snaps that he's gotten in his career. You did see some new names out there. Obviously, a lot of those came towards the end of the game when the Gators were well on their way to victory. Antoine Powell played his most snaps that he's ever played. So you definitely got to see some new names and hopefully a sign of things to come. A name that we haven't seen since the Tennessee game, Mordecai McDaniel, did not play much. I think he had 7 total snaps in the game, but all in all, Gators, yeah, I don't know where I was going with what the next comment was. So finally, let's get into the prediction part of our show. Nick, give us a score, an offensive MVP, and a defensive MVP.
I think I want to say that Florida, you know, goes in there, handles business. I thought Florida probably looking past Vanderbilt last week a little bit to this LSU matchup. Credit that to a slow start. But there's always like weird stuff that happens with Florida LSU. So I'll go probably a little bit closer. I think Florida will cover the spread. I'll go like 32-17. Offensive MVP, I think it'll be Emory Jones. I think he can build off of what he did last week. I think, you know, there's obviously still some areas that, you know, that can be cleaned up, but I think he'll be able to run, scramble, and he should be able to throw, especially with the guys LSU is missing. Defensive MVP, I'm going to go with Jeremiah Moon, who I think was one of the only players who was on that 2016 team, that Hurricane Matthew year. I don't think he played that year. He was redshirting, but his last go around in the boot. So I'll say Jeremiah Moon, defensive MVP.
I'm going to go score 24-13.
Ooh.
What happened?
Silk's vibe has changed a lot in the last couple weeks.
Silk's.
Man, this is a pedestrian effort by my play caller right now. So I'm not like, just keeping it in the buck, man. 24-13. We do jump out. We'll sit on the lead and just try to drain the clock. We're not trying to like come in and beat the snot out of people anymore, or at all. That's what I mean. The big boys do, man. Like, if Bama can come in and smack you, they're gonna do that. Georgia's gonna do the same. It's not like where we come in, just try just
Kentucky
teams to get out of there. Kentucky, like, you gotta come in and beat the crap out of people, man. But LSU is down. We'll give them a nice little fight. I'm gonna say 24-13. Defensive player of the game, I'm going with Zach Carter, bro. I just think he's just playing great football this year. I'm going to get a nod to him. Easy pick. I think he go in there and bully some people around, and you know what I'm saying, and slide some draft boards. Offensive MVP, I'm going to go with Naquan because that's just the easy pick. They should lean on him very heavily. Or Copeland. Copeland's been hooping. Shout out to Jacob Copeland. He had a coming out party a little bit versus Vandy as well. Solid game. Probably his best game, right?
Yeah.
USF?
Well, USF game.
USF.
But that didn't really count, right? I mean, it did. It counts, but there was those two huge plays, right, that obviously swung it in a completely different way. But I thought it was his best game overall. So he looked happy.
For sure.
That's what I cheer for, is fun and excitement. You know, these guys.
Just hope you just hope both teams have fun.
No, I just hope our team has
fun. No, this season, that's where I'm at at this point. Yeah, we just want you to have fun now. Win some games, see where we at. Save some plays 2022.
Who knows? Maybe end up in Charlotte for the Duke's Mayo Bowl, right?
Nah, I ain't going.
Man, well, I guess I'll go solo.
Yeah.
Well, Nick will be there. Oh, Spence, I appreciate you being timely with this.
Where's the game at?
Charlotte.
Charlotte?
Yeah, Charlotte's not bad in December.
In the winter? I don't know.
Oh, bring a coat. Bring a hat. Cover that head up.
Oh, that's a fact. Scully.
Yeah. Man,
you gotta cover the dome up, bro. You just came out there raw dogging it.
Yeah.
And that brings us to our Manscaped tree.
Not yet. Almost. I'll go Gator. I like the Gators to win 34-14. Yeah, 34-14. I think the Gators dominate this game. I think that LSU is going to be depleted. I don't know if they're going to be playing for much. I think Gators force them to I think if the Gators score quickly and force, you know, either some turnovers or some punts, I think that LSU is going to be a little bit defeated. I don't know if they have much to play for other than pride. But outside of that, I think that Florida is a more talented team right now on the offensive side of the ball, because I said he's going to get more than 10 carries. I'm stuck with going with Naquan Wright. And on the defensive side of the ball, I'll go with Rashard Torrance. I thought he had a dynamic game against Vanderbilt, and I think it carries over. And I think that he's the guy that we need.
Vanderbilt was so slow. I just got to see him do it on faster talent. That's all.
Yeah.
They were so slow, but he ran that alley beautifully all afternoon. So shout out to Torrance.
I love it. Well,
I got one contender, contender or pretender Saturday, Kentucky, Georgia. We might be living in a world where Kentucky is the SEC East champion. If they can come away with a win Saturday.
I like Georgia by 24 plus points.
No, I don't think so. I think this game is a lot closer than that. 24 points?
Yeah.
I think it's a one possession game at the most 10. I think Kentucky's a well coached football team. I don't know who's the best team Georgia has faced so far.
I mean,
they look good. I'm not going to discredit Georgia at all, but I think there's going to be a little shock when they play. It's going to be some pushback. I think Kentucky's front four on defense is pretty stout, better than I thought going into the game. So I think I don't think it's going to be just like they come in and just smoke them by 20 something points. I don't foresee that.
I mean, we've already mentioned that LSU is pretty bad, right?
Right.
Kentucky struggled moving the ball against Florida. They only scored 7 points on offense, and they had that huge chunk play, you know, for 42 yards for the touchdown. Outside of that, they didn't look very good against South Carolina. They squeaked by Chattanooga. They struggled with Missouri, right? So I don't know who Kentucky has really beaten or shown that they can be a prolific, you know, offense. I mean, sure, they did well against LSU, but we've talked about all of the issues that LSU has now, right? So I don't think Kentucky can move the ball against Georgia. I think that Georgia maybe isn't a prolific offense, but I definitely think that they can move the ball against Kentucky. I think they're going to wear them down. And, you know, I think that Georgia is going to be a very formidable matchup against Alabama this year. And I don't know.
Even if they lose, if they win out and they lose the SEC championship, they're still in the playoffs.
Yeah. Yep. Right there with Iowa and Cincinnati.
We got to play spoiler in that situation.
Man, Silk's whole mood is just took no, 5 weeks.
I'm just talking to the league, bro. Like, I can't. I want you know, like, what am I cheering for at this point? Like, we just in third place in the East right now. I don't foresee both of those teams taking two L's. Only way that happens if Kentucky take an L this weekend. If Georgia take an L this weekend in Kentucky, then it's possible that they could take two.
Need to lose three.
Yeah, we're just out of it. Tennessee is like we probably got blessed playing Tennessee early in the season. If you want to have that conversation too,
Tennessee right wins now. looking better and better.
Right.
I think Kentucky gets exposed. I think they are a pretender, and I think Georgia is, like Dan said, probably the, you know, maybe you
thinking 27 points.
I don't know. Yeah, probably. But we thought it was crazy talk.
Do you think? Because I mean, it's week one, but I think now that performance against Clemson not even impressive no more. Right?
No,
it actually was a shitty performance by Georgia in hindsight.
But I still think watching Georgia, I think every one of their front seven on defense is going to be playing in the NFL. I think all five of their starting offensive linemen will be playing in the NFL. I think they're going to be able to bully Kentucky. Before the year, people were saying, and we kind of bucked against it, that the SEC is Alabama, Georgia, and then everyone else. And I think right now what we've seen is probably that, you know, obviously Alabama loses last week. But I think they look like the
cream. Alabama should have two L's.
Yeah.
They should have two L's. Jimbo just had the balls to finish off what we should have. That's all. Shout out to Jimbo. But I said after we played Bama, I think they got a couple or maybe one or two L's in their pocket. Just by the way they versus us. I thought they was a little vulnerable in the offensive line. They got some guys, but it ain't what the offensive line they usually have. So I like after we played Bama, I thought they was a little suspect. They should have two L's right now. The refs helped them out a little bit more in our game than they did Texas A&M.
The check bounced last week.
Right.
They weren't getting those same Bama calls.
Did you guys watch the Arkansas Ole Miss end of that game? Final score 52-51.
Yeah, we were actually
highlights. I didn't watch it live.
Yeah, Arkansas decides to go for two instead of tying up the game. What are your thoughts? Obviously, hindsight's 20/20, but you go for the win and go for two, or you try to take it to overtime.
Sam Pittman, you took over a program that isn't a perennial power. Not a ton of expectations. You're only in year two. I think that's a call that you can make that gets your fans excited, even though it doesn't work out. I think that's a call that the fan base goes, all right, cool. We like an aggressive coach. Yeah. If you're in year four, year five, and you still stink and you're doing that, you probably piss people off. But year two, you've had a couple good wins in the last 2 years. So I think, people will like it. I think it's probably the right time for him to make that kind of call, even though it didn't work out.
Yep. That's a team that, put up a lot of points against Ole Miss, a team – a lot of people are clamoring for their head coach that Georgia shut out 37-0. So when we're talking about, decent wins that Georgia was able to do, you can look back at that. Do you guys think that this is the most anticlimactic so far Heisman Trophy race that we've seen in maybe a decade? Because I don't know. I mean, Bryce Young's probably your favorite. But Spencer Rattler fell off, got benched against Texas.
Shout out to Lincoln Riley down to like bench somebody though. Oh, mad at that. what? I'm just saying.
I don't even know who would the favorite be. Would it be Bryce Young?
Yeah,
I think he's barely the favorite right now. Your early preseason favorites are not there yet. Yeah, Matt Corral. Is up there. Let me pull up the list as it is today. NCAA Futures, Heisman Trophy. All right, so we got Bryce Young at +105. Matt Corral right behind him at +180. Then C.J. Stroud at Ohio State. Bijan Robinson at Texas. Desmond Ridler at Cincinnati. Kenneth Walker at Michigan State. And then it goes down pretty quickly from there.
Shout out to Matt Corral. Matt Corral's got 12 passing touchdowns, no interceptions, and leads the SEC, tied for the lead in the SEC with rushing touchdowns. He has 8, and so does Tyler Batty from Missouri. 20 touchdowns, no turnovers. That's a good year.
Not bad. Let's take that.
Shout out to Matt Corral.
Yep. Shout out to Matt Corral. Could have been good. All right, so tell us about male hygiene.
Time to get balls deep into this ad read. Before you get balls deep, shave them balls with a Lawnmower 4.0. Smoothest ride on a pair of balls south of the Mississippi. Lawnmower 4.0. You can use it in the shower. It has a nice little flashlight on it. So if you take those nice intimate showers like me with no light on, you still can get every single string of hair with that little LED light. It's pretty efficient. Coupon code SG at checkout is going to get you right. 20% off at checkout, free shipping. And be sure to get that ball deodorant. Still the best lotion that you'll ever find. Keep those things nice, smooth, and smelling good.
They're good. Right before Christmas time.
It is Christmas time. Get that gift set. If you love the man in your life, take care of his balls.
They're good. Wants to live by. Well, Nick, it's time to end the show. It's a hell of a transition. So they don't teach that in broadcast school.
not at all.
And Nick, take us out with the song of the week, and we'll see you boys next week.
Same time, man.
Before my song, congratulations, my friends, Jamie and Andrew. Are in the hospital having their first child, a little baby boy. So Hoping mom and baby are happy and healthy tonight and everything goes well for them. So shout out to them. And it's we have to go Louisiana. I'm gonna go Lil Wayne featuring Jay-Z, Mr. Carter for LSU Week.
Oh man, that's a beautiful tune. That's a nice little jingle there, Nicholas.
I'm on a little hot streak here. The last two songs, I've gotten the that's a nice little jingle from Silk. So I think I'm doing something right here.
You're in your bag. I like it. We'll get it shut down like a mod.
That was nuts. The emails that we got.
Yo, that was crazy.
I've listened to this podcast with my children in the car, and it's F this and F that. Creative liberties.
Oh, man. You got to read the room a little bit sometimes. Hey, same corner, same time.
Same corner, same time. See you boys next week.
Yo, Jordan, this right here is cut. Yeah, I feel big, you know what I mean? Like, not big in the sense of weight, you know what I mean? Like, gaining weight or nothing like that, like, colossal, like, you know what I mean? Like, I heard you were looking for me.
Hey, Mr. Carter.
Hello.
Tell me, where have you been?
You know. Forever from me to you. I heard somebody say, Judge, I'ma need a suit. I'ma need a coupe. I won't need a roof. Fly it and Beetlejuice. I got the flow, I'm trying to see the roof. Didn't wear bulletproof, so I got shot and you can see the proof. Blind eyes can look at me and see the truth. Wonder if Stevie do. But I'ma leave it to God, not be beneath the you. Cause I'ma murder, why I kill, oh, and even you. Man, I got summer hating on me cause I'm hotter than the sun. Got spring hating on me cause I ain't never sprung. Winter hating on me cause I'm colder than y'all. And I would never fall. I'm being hated by the season. So fuck y'all, hating for no reason.
Hey, Mr. Carter.
I am him.
Tell me, where have you been?
Around the world and I'm back again.
Been asking,
who's been asking about me? In case you're wondering. Him.
Tell me, where have you been?
Around the world, now I'm back again.
Been asking,
who's been asking about me? In case you wonder, been. Yeah, I've been in and out the bank, bitch. Why y'all asshole niggas been on the same shit? I flush them and watch them go down the drain quick. Two words you never hear, Wayne quit. Cause Wayne win and they lose. I call them April babies cause they fools. And when they snooze, we up, feet up like a paraplegic. A paraplegic. A parallel park and a red and yellow thing. Old school Atlanta Hawk, like I'm from Cali Park. But I'm from Holly Grove. Now all my blood screams Su Wu and da da do. I knew my rule and I play it well. And I weigh it well on my Libra scale. I suck a pussy, fuck a pussy, leave it
there. Long hair don't even care.
Hey, Mr. Carter.
I am him.
Tell me, where have you been?
Around the world, now I'm back again.
Been asking, baby.
Who's been asking about me? In case you're wondering,
Mr. Carter,
I am him.
Tell me, where have you been?
Around the world, now I'm back again.
Been asking, baby.
Who's been asking about me?
Been
in case you're wondering. Yeah, I'm right here in my chair with my crown and my dear. Queen B as I share my time with my ear. Young Carter, go farther, go further, go harder. Is that not why we came? And if not, then why bother? Show no mercy in Marcy, your lagers. I'm far from being the bastard that Marcy had fathered. Now my name's being mentioned with the martyrs. The Biggies and the Pox and the Marleys and the Marcuses. Garvey got me a Molotov cocktail. Flow, even if you box well, can't stop the blows. Kaboom, the rock boy in the room. The dope boy just came off the spoon. Also, I'm so fly, I'm on autopilot. What guys just stare at my wardrobe? I see your euros, that's right, plural. I took so much change from this rap game, it's your goal.
Yeah.
It's my goal, yeah. And I'ma go so opposite of soft off the Richter, Hector, Camacho, man, Randy Savage, far from average, above status, quo, flow, so pro, I know, I ride slow, and when I pass, they say, what up, killer man, stop bringing up my past. And next time you mention Pac, Biggie, or Jay-Z, don't forget Weezy, baby. Been hustling.
They've been asking, they've been
hustling hard. Shit. And I swear to everything, when I leave the circle, it's gonna be on both feet. Never knees in the dirt. You can try me, fucker, but when I squeeze it hurt, fine. We lose two lives, yours and mine. Give me any amount of time. Don't let Miss Carter grieve at the funeral parlor, dripping tears down my sleeve. Give me any amount of time. Don't let Miss Carter grieve.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.